You are listening to a sermon by Walter Bergen, recorded on Sunday, September 9th, 2012, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
It is always an honor, a privilege, and a pleasure to come here to this place, this chapel at Mount Simon Center, and to be with brothers and sisters here for Point Grey. It's just always a remarkable experience for me. It's a remarkable experience because this place has been so very formative for so much of Janet and my life. Before I begin to elaborate some of that, there are a few things that I must do. One because I feel called to it, and one because I'm obligated from my home congregation. My home congregation today is Emmanuel Mennonite Church. And one of the things that we have tried to cultivate at Emmanuel Mennonite Church is a sense of camaraderie between congregations. So I bring you greetings from Emmanuel Mennonite Church, April Yamasaki, our pastor. Today, that doesn't seem strange. 25 years ago, when Jan and I came to this place, that was the unthought thought in British Columbia among certain Mennonites. Today, she's the longest-serving pastor in my denomination in British Columbia. So we send greetings. We wish all of you well. May God's presence and blessing rest upon you here at Point Grey.
Thank you.
And secondly, I feel called to do this because I have been to too many chapels and too many Sunday services that were forgettable. Right? So in order to make this Sunday morning somewhat more memorable, what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask all of the Point Grey residents to stand, not this very moment, but in a moment. I'm going to ask first all of the women to stand, and I'm going to ask you to tell us your name, where you're from, and what you're studying. And when all of the women have done that, I'm going to ask a blessing upon you. And then when we'll do that with all of the men, and I'm going to ask the residence coordinators to participate in this as well. So, women, would you stand? Tell us where you're from. We're going to start over here. Where you're from, what you're studying,
and your name. My name's Erica. I am studying honors history and minoring in German at UBC, and I'm from Squim, Washington.
My name is Catherine, and I'm studying nutritional sciences, and I'm from Langley.
All right.
My name is Kara, and I'm from Surrey, and I'm studying cell biology and genetics and biopsychology.
My name is Kirsty. I'm from Langley. I'm studying nutrition.
Yep. Wonderful.
My name is Morgan. I'm from Ohio, and I'm studying theology at Regent College.
My name is Chloe. I am from Abbotsford, and I am studying French and teaching English as a second language.
I'm Tamara, and I'm from Saskatchewan. I moved here a little before this from Prince George. I'm studying dietetics at UBC.
My name is Serafina. I'm from Abbotsford, and I'm studying political science and psychology.
My name is Nicole. I'm studying opera at UBC, and I'm from Metaskwin, Alberta.
I'm Jen. I'm from Calgary, and I'm studying photography.
I'm Catherine. I'm from Langley, and I'm studying.
I'm Rachel. I'm from Abbotsford originally, but I just moved back from Winnipeg, and I'm studying a Master of Journalism.
All right. Remain standing. In the book of Numbers, there's a blessing, and that blessing was given to those who would give leadership to the people of God. And the blessing is this: the Lord bless you. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord bless you and keep you and lift his countenance upon you and give you peace. May that blessing be with you all the days of your life. Please sit down. Men, those of you who are Point Grey residents, please stand. And start over here again, and your name, where you're from, and what you're studying.
My name is Gabriel. I'm from Abbotsford, and I'm studying electrical engineering.
My name is Ruben. I'm also from Abbotsford, and I'm a first-year engineer at UBC.
My name is John. I'm from Langley, and I'm studying nuclear science at UBC.
I'm David from Fort Langley, and I'm doing general science at UBC.
I'm Drew. I'm also from Langley. I'm studying civil engineering at UBC.
I'm Thomas Bergen. I'm from Abbotsford, and I'm studying theology at Regent.
I'm Michael Thomas. I'm from Oregon, and I'm also studying theology at Regent.
My name is Evan. I'm from Abbotsford, and I'm studying engineering physics at UBC.
I'm Trevor. I'm also from Abbotsford, and I'm also studying engineering physics.
My name is Benjamin. I'm originally from Ohio, and I just finished a degree in major policy at UBC.
I'm Daniel. I'm from Calgary, and I'm doing theology at Regent College.
My name is Ben White. I'm from Oshawa, Ontario, and I'm studying New Testament at Regent College.
All right. As you heard before, this blessing comes from Numbers, and it's for those who will be giving leadership to the people of God. May the Lord bless you. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord bless you and keep you and lift his countenance upon you and give you peace. And may this blessing be with you all the days of your life. Please be seated. We've gathered this morning to hear some word from God. And I have tried to be spiritually attuned to what God might say. But unfortunately, I had about 11 pigs that got out this morning, and I was running around after them, chasing them mightily, and sicking my dog to bite them in the hocks so that they would go back into their allotted space. So if you think that I have any spiritual airs to put on, I have none. I have been a swineherd this morning. Perhaps God will even speak through a swineherd this morning. One step forward. What does it take for you, for I, for all of us together, to take one step forward towards God? What does it take for a Syrophoenician woman to approach a Jewish rabbi and ask him for a favor that might change her child's life? It takes courage. Perhaps a certain blind courage, but it takes courage. And I suspect that your journey here to this place and these studies has involved some courage. You have had to step up and step forward and leave behind certain things in order to embrace studies at UBC or Regent College or Emily Carr, wherever it is that you study. And I want you to know that when you take a step forward, God is able to guide you. If you leave your car and park and ask for directions, there's no point. You're not going anywhere. You've got to put it in drive. And it's the same with your life. Unless you get up and take a step forward, God cannot guide you. And for the fact that you are here today means that you have taken a step forward. And God is in the process of guiding you. 25 years ago, there was a group of people here, and the Point Grey old-timers know these stories all too well. 25 years ago, there was a group of people who had themselves been wounded in their faith community and had also been wounded in their vocations, be it nursing or education, because those two worlds were always being separated, the world of ideas and knowledge and education and the world of faith. And there was a dream that somehow there could be a bridge built between the world of ideas, in this case UBC, and the world of faith. You, my friends, my brothers and sisters, are the recipients of that remarkable sacrifice 25 years ago. When Jan and I were first approached to come and serve here as residence coordinators, we talked about it briefly and decided that no, we wouldn't come. But because the people were so nice, and it happened to be that the pastor who'd done our marital counseling was asking, we would at least hear them out and then say no. So we traveled to, I believe it was Peace Church. I can't quite recall, but it was Palmer and Artis Becker. It was the first time we met John and Erna Friesen. I had heard of Evan and Janice Kreider, but did not know them. And we were completely dumbfounded that there were 10 couples that were prepared to put up $20,000 of equity in their own homes to buy a Catholic convent, which is what this was. And the bank was requiring that they have that security because they wouldn't give a mortgage of $600,000, which seemed like an absolutely insurmountable amount of money. And Jan and I came away scratching our heads because, quite frankly, we had not met Christians who were prepared to be missionary in this setting in that way. And we found ourselves saying yes to being residence coordinators after being married for 4 months. Ready-made family. And we said yes when they said, we can't pay you anything, we don't have any money. And after the first 4 months, someone whose name shall not be mentioned at the moment, I don't want to embarrass them, said, well, now we have money till the end of the year. And then we didn't know that at the time. Fundraising banquet had some success. So we didn't know that we were taking as big a risk as we were. And I started studying at Regent College, and Janet worked at with the Vancouver City Health. And a remarkable group of people took a remarkable risk. They took a step forward because they believed that somehow their own experience of being misunderstood when they studied, their own experience of having people tell them that religious faith was stupid when they had faith and they weren't stupid, who decided to do something about it. Today you feel like students, and in very short order you will have debts, and you wonder, what on earth can I do? The reality is that you will in very short order be leaders. In less than a decade, each of you will be in leadership positions. Each of you. And it's time to think now what kind of contribution you want to make, not just to your own career, but to the community around you, your community of faith, community of engineers. Time to think is now, because once you're in it, you'll be working your buns off trying to make a living. Believe me. But I want you, as students, to know that there were a group of people 25 years ago whom you are here today in a place of comfort and security, and a whole bunch of ideas are going to get banged around because people took a risk, they took a step forward. And that's a remarkable thing, because this world is full of people who ask for God's direction and leave their car in park. And none of this was without frustrations. I have a very clear memory of two people downstairs with a huge 36-inch concrete cutting saw working their guts up and someone asking them to do more. And the reality is that some people's feelings were hurt, and rightfully so. Did they give up? Did they stop? No, they continued. Life will have bumps and irritations and pain. And that's not a reason to give up your morals. That's not a reason to give up your ideals. That's not a reason to give up the good cause that you're involved in. And sometimes you'll be taken advantage of and assumed upon, and someone will be insensitive. Quite frankly, life's like that, and God keeps trying to weave good out of those things. It is how life is. In the course of studying, I have come across some things that have startled me and have brought me to a place where I have had to rethink some things. And I want to share with you two short vignettes to help you see that and alert you to it, so that you might as well be alerted to the things you don't expect. When I was studying at Regent back in the late 1980s, early 1990s, Mr. Darwin was not considered a very pleasant person in evangelical circles. This is Charles Darwin, the author of The Origin of Species. And partially because of the whole idea of Origin of Species. And interestingly enough, in this book called Dirt, I came across a chapter on Charles Darwin. And I was curious about it. This is like 3 years ago. And I was curious about it because what I didn't know about Mr. Darwin is that he not only is the author of The Origin of Species, Mr. Darwin is also the grandfather of soil science in the Western world. When the controversies around the origin of species takes place after his sailing on the Beagle for 7 years and then returns to England, writes the book, and there's a series of bishops who argue that this is a terrible thing, Mr. Darwin does not participate in those controversies, strangely enough. He has gone back to the estate of his family and remembered that the year when he left on his voyage on the Beagle, the plowman had been hitting rocks. And when he returned and asked the plowman to replow the field, it had been fallow some 8 years, he heard no rocks being struck by the plow. And he wanted to understand why. Sometimes the simplest questions lead you to the most remarkable insights, because the simple questions are the ones no one asks. No one knew how or why soil was being created. And Mr. Darwin spent the rest of his life working with remodeled aquariums and trying to figure out how much dirt moles moved and earth. And I invite you to use Google and look up Charles Darwin and soil, and figure out what on earth Mr. Darwin figured out. Because that contribution has been a remarkable contribution to our understanding of soil, whom Leonardo da Vinci said, we know more about the celestial bodies than we know about the earth under our feet. So as you get educated, remember that there are people who have prejudices, Christians and non-Christians, and that sometimes there are these unexpected things that come up in life that would and should reorder how you think about things. Do not put your trust in princes, because they have their own agenda, and when they die, it's gone. Very simply, they have their own agenda, and when they die, it's gone. A second set of vignettes. Jen and I served with MCC in the former Soviet Union. As part of that, I had the opportunity to travel to South Central Siberia. Okay, so this is that land that's east of Kazakhstan, north of Afghanistan, south of the Trans-Siberian Railroad. And remarkably, it was a place where Mennonites settled, of all things. And it's remarkably like Swift Current, Saskatchewan, for those of you who've been through there. And one of the things that I heard was of a created famine in 1942, 1943, 1944, that killed 3 people in one village, 11 children in another village, 23 people in another village, and in some hundreds and hundreds of ethnic German, religiously they would have been Reformed or Mennonite or Lutheran or Catholic, people in something called a German settlement. Because when Germany invaded Russia, one of the things that the Russian government did is it took all of the food away, all of the seed grain away from these villages in south-central Siberia. And so when I asked questions, they told me stories of that famine, that created famine. And I didn't think about it that much. I thought about it only in terms of the suffering, which was real. A story of a mother who was imprisoned for 14 days for trying to glean corn from a field already harvested. And when she returned home, all 3 of her children had starved to death in bed. This is the legacy of horrible government policy. Government policy based on ethnicity. And then I continued reading. I have tried to be a lifelong learner. So I try to learn something new every day. And in the process of reading, one of the things I've tried to understand is there was this whole process of interesting people who were doing interesting things with biodynamics and agriculture that was wholesome and whole, and it fell apart around the turn of the century. There were people like Liberty Hyde Bailey, evangelical Christian, studied agriculture at Cornell University. And in the process of reading these folks, I came across a name called Sergei Vavilov. Sergei Vavilov is the grandfather or the scientist, the scholar, who discovered that people cultivated certain plants and did certain things in certain places, and from there it spread out. And he cataloged some of that in Central Asia. For example, all of the apples that we have come from a series of forested hillsides in Central Asia. All the genetics come from there, and they have commuted and moved around. And Mr. Vavilov documented this. And Mr. Vavilov founded an institute in St. Petersburg where they tried to gather together as many original seeds, and it's the largest seed repository in the world. Kind of a neat factoid. Mr. Vavilov, and I'm going to tie this back to the Mennonites and the Germans starting in just a moment. Mr. Vavilov was denounced. Okay, he was denounced by a man called Timofey Lysenko. Mr. Lysenko curried favor with a man called Joseph Stalin, someone who's responsible for my grandfather's death. I have a grandfather buried in the Ukraine, courtesy of Mr. Stalin, for the sin of being a human being. So Timofey Lysenko argued that there was this whole new world opening up, this whole new socialist world, and it was going to be so much remarkably better that this new socialist world was going to have a new socialist science. And a part of that socialist science was that they were going to freeze grain in water, and it would pollinate more quickly and germinate more quickly, and it would have larger crops than any capitalist crop before that's been dried. It was a new science. Does this sound at all familiar? Will there be people in your university who will say, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread? The reality was is that our Christian brothers and sisters in South Central Siberia had all of their grain taken away. And in the spring, the government came with trucks full of frozen grain. It had been soaked in water, frozen, and it was dumped, and they were told to plant it. And as the sun came up, and this is a place not unlike Winnipeg, where it's very cold in the wintertime, and it's very warm in the summertime, and as that grain melted, it molded and heated, and they planted all of that grain because they were told they must, and if they did not, they would be punished as evildoers, breakers. Wreckers is actually the technical term for it. Wrecking was considered a Soviet activity or an anti-Soviet activity. And when the crop completely failed, people were arrested and imprisoned for wrecking. Okay, South Central Siberia. So Timofey Lysenko's new socialist science was so much, shall we call it avian nitrogenous materials? Very pleasant way of calling it something. And yet, this man was honored for bringing socialist science to the fore. He had an institute named after him. There was all kinds of wonderful things happened. And Sergei Vavilov died in 1943 of something called dystrophy, which is when you get worked too hard and not fed enough to the point where your body consumes itself. Starvation. Recognize that there are people in this world, and some of them are at the university, who will teach you something that's nonsense. And it will be up to you to be a person of wisdom and discernment to figure out which one is which. And that process has real consequences. Mr. Vavilov so inspired his assistants that 9 of 15 of his assistants at the seed repository died during the siege of St. Petersburg with edible seeds around them, committed to keeping seeds for posterity so that should there be some calamity, that there would always be seeds to repopulate the agricultural fields of this world and feed the people of this world. 9 of 15. What kind of vision inspires people to make that kind of sacrifice? And Mr. Lysenko, God willing, you never hear of him. For his contribution to this world is one of a sorry mess of ill and illness, of death and destruction. And his name should not be remembered, for he brought to us calamity. So when I pondered this text and I looked at the plans of princes, they die and they're gone. There are princes who seek to do good, and in doing good, they seek to follow God. And God weaves good from them. And there are those who do not. You, my brothers and sisters, have been given the privilege to study and to find those men and women who will and are making a remarkable contribution in this world and those who do not. Bring discernment to your lives. I said at the outset this morning that I have been to too many church services and student chapels that were not memorable. Let me conclude by telling you of the one chapel I do remember from Fresno Pacific College, 4 years of study. There was a funny-looking man on campus at Fresno Pacific College. There was all of 600 students there. And his name was Delbert Wientz. And Delbert most often was getting into trouble with denominational leaders of some sort or another because he kept asking questions. And he asked questions in such a way that made people uncomfortable. But Delbert was and he taught philosophy at and he had this kind of squeaky voice that was kind of hard to listen to. And he really had to be motivated to go to his class because he wasn't the greatest lecturer. But there was something about him. He was always, you know, he would listen in on student conversations and say, that's a really interesting question. And he'd never give you an answer, which aggravated me because I was looking for answers. I was, you know, I had come to college having newly committed my life to Christ, and I was looking for answers, and he kept saying, well, that's a really good question. And quite frankly, it frustrated me. Interesting that all those people had answers, I don't remember them anymore. But I do remember this Delbert Weins. And Delbert used to hang out with another man called J.B. Taves, whom most of you don't know. He's a Mennonite Brethren church leader who was had been hurt in an accident, and he would lecture with his two fingers like this, and he'd have this nervous twitch. And I won an award once for imitating him at a seminary retreat. But Delbert and JB would talk, and they were leaders in the Mennonite Brethren Church, but also profoundly educated. J.B. Taves had a master's in philosophy from the Free University of Amsterdam, besides having a PhD in New Testament. These were not dumb men. They were bright men. So all of these teachers and folks had to take their turn and having chapels, and I was a keener student, and I was the student representative on the chapel committee, and we were organizing chapels, and most of them weren't that memorable. But this one particular time, we had to ask Delbert, because each instructor had to take their turn giving the chapel. And so we had to ask Delbert. And so it was, you know, one of those warm May days in Fresno where it's, you don't really have to pay attention because it's so nice outside. You're just waiting for them to leave so you can have your lunch outside. And chapel was always before lunch. So Delbert is the chapel speaker. So the usual format, there's an introduction, there's community announcements, there's a hymn, and Delbert gets to speak. And Delbert, in those days, you know, he had this sort of part of his hair in the middle, and his hair was about this long, and it looked a little bit like a woman's hair, and he just didn't bother to cut his hair. He was too busy thinking. And so Delbert comes to the podium, and I'm, you know, the students would complain when chapels weren't that good, and the student representative got to listen to the complaints. And Delbert comes to the podium, and his meditation is all of about 21 seconds long. He says to us as students, there are three things that separate us from the animal kingdom: an opposing thumb, the ability to think, and the ability to pray. Therefore, go and do them. And with that, he sat down.